of chapters 11 to 13. In addition, the steps you are to learn each week are available for you to follow in a series of guided meditations. Preparing your environment. Location, location, location. You have learned that overcoming your environment is a critical step in breaking the habit of being yourself. Finding the right environment in which to meditate, one with a minimum of distractions, will really give you a leg up on defeating the first of the big three. We'll cover the other two, the body and time, in a moment. Pick a comfortable place where you can be alone and not seduced by the addiction of the external world. Make it secluded, private, and easily accessible. Go to this place every day and make it your special location. You will form a strong connection with this setting. It will represent where you frequent to tame the distracted ego, overcome the old self, create a new self, and forge a new destiny. In time, you will truly look forward to being there. A participant in one event I led told me that she always fell asleep when she meditated. Our conversation went like this. Where do you practice your mindfulness training? In bed. What does the law of association say about your bed and sleep? I associate my bed with sleep. What does the law of repetition demonstrate about sleeping in your bed every night? If I sleep in the same place nightly, I'm hardwiring an association of bed with sleep. Given the fact that neural networks are formed by combining the law of association with the law of repetition, might you have formed a neural network to affect that bed means sleep? And since neural networks are automatic programs that we unconsciously use every day, does it stand to reason that when you are on your bed, your body, as the mind, will tell you to automatically and unconsciously fall into oblivion? Yep, I guess I need a better place to meditate. Not only did I suggest that she stay out of bed when she meditates, but that she find a different place separate from her bedroom. When you want to build a new neural network, it makes good sense to do your mindfulness practices in a setting that represents growth, regeneration, and a new future. And please, do not see this location as a torture chamber in which you have to meditate. This type of attitude will undermine your efforts. Preventing distractions from your environment. Make sure you won't be interrupted or distracted by people or pets. A do not disturb sign can help. As much as possible, eliminate sensory stimuli that could force your mind back to your old personality or to awareness of the external world, especially to elements of your familiar environment. Turn off your phone and computer. I know it's hard, but those calls, texts, tweets, IMs, and emails can wait. You also don't want the aroma of coffee brewing or food cooking to waft into your meditation setting. Ensure that the room is a comfortable temperature with no drafts. I usually use a blindfold. Music. Music can be useful as long as you don't play selections that will bring to mind distracting associations. If I play music, I typically use soft, relaxing, trance-inducing instrumentals or chants without lyrics. When not listening to music, I often put in earplugs. Preparing your body. Position, position, position. I sit up very straight. My back is totally vertical. My neck is erect. My arms and legs are resting poised and still. And my body is relaxed. What about using a recliner? Just as with sitting in bed, many people fall asleep in recliners. Sitting upright in a regular chair, limbs uncrossed, is best. If you prefer to sit on the ground and cross your legs Indian style, that's fine too. Preventing bodily distractions. In effect, you want to put the body away so that you can focus without needing to pay it any attention. For example, use the restroom. Dress in loose clothes. Remove your watch. Drink a little water and have more within reach. Take care of any hunger pangs before you begin. Head nodding versus nodding off. Since we're talking about the body, let me address an issue that may come up in your own meditation practice. Although you are sitting upright, you may find your head nodding as though you're about to fall asleep. This is a good sign. You are moving into the alpha and theta brainwave states. Your body is used to lying down when your brainwaves slow down. When you suddenly nod like this, your body wants to doze off. With continued practice, you'll become accustomed to your brain slowing down while you sit upright. The head nodding will eventually stop, and your body won't tend to fall asleep. Making time to meditate. When to meditate? As you know, daily changes in brain chemistry result in easier access to the subconscious mind, just after you wake in the morning and before you go to bed at night. These are the best times to meditate because you can more readily slip into the alpha or theta states. I prefer to meditate around the same time every morning. If you are really enthusiastic and would like to meditate at both of these times of day, go for it. However, I would suggest that folks just starting out do so once daily. How long to meditate? Take a few minutes before each day's meditation session to review any writing you have done in connection with the steps you are about to practice. As I said, think of these notes as your roadmap to the journey you are about to take. You may also find it helpful to pre-read portions of the text to remind you of what you're about to do before you go into meditation. While you're learning the process, every session will start with 10 to 20 minutes for induction. As you add steps, your time frame should lengthen by about 10 to 15 minutes per step. Over time, you will move more rapidly through the steps with which you are already familiar. By the time you learn how to do all of those in this process, your daily meditation, including induction, will generally take 40 to 50 minutes. If you need to finish by a certain time, set a timer to go off 10 minutes before you must end your session. That will give you a heads up to complete the session rather than having to stop abruptly without bringing what you are doing to a close. And set aside enough time to meditate so that the clock doesn't become a concern. After all, if you are meditating and find yourself thinking about your watch, you haven't overcome time. Essentially, you may have to wake up earlier or go to bed later in order to carve out a slot in your day. Preparing your state of mind. Mastering the ego. To be honest, I do have those days where I battle my ego tooth and nail, since it wants to be in control. Some mornings as I begin the process, my analytical mind starts thinking about flights to catch, meetings with staff, injured patients, reports and articles I need to write, my kids and their complexities, phone calls I have to make, and random thoughts from nowhere that pop into my head. I'm obsessing about everything predictable in my external life. Typically, my mind, like most people's, is either anticipating the future or remembering the past. When that occurs, I have to settle down and realize that those are all known associations that have nothing to do with creating something new in the present moment. If this happens to you, it is your job to go beyond the tedium of normal thinking and enter into the creative moment. Mastering the body. If your body bucks like an unbridled stallion because it wants to be the mind, to get up and do something, think about some place it has to go in the future, or remember a past emotional experience with some person in your life. You must settle it down into the present moment and relax it. Every time you do, you are reconditioning your body to a new mind. And in time, it will acquiesce. It was conditioned by an unconscious mind, and it has to be restrained by you. So love it, work with it, and be kind to it. It will ultimately surrender to you as its master. Remember to be determined, persistent, excited, joyful, flexible, and inspired. When you do so, you are reaching for the hand of the divine. Now let's begin. Chapter 10. Open the door to your creative state. Week 1. At an early point in my professional career, I learnt about and eventually taught hypnosis and self-hypnosis. One of the techniques that hypnosis experts use to get individuals into a so-called trance is called induction. Simply put, we teach people how to change their brainwaves. All someone has to do in order to be hypnotized, or to hypnotize him or herself, is to move down from the high or mid-range beta waves into a more relaxed alpha or theta state. Thus, meditation and self-hypnosis are similar. I could have included induction with the preparatory information in the last chapter, because induction prepares you to enter a coherent brainwave state that is conducive to meditation. By mastering induction, you will build a solid foundation for the meditative practices you will learn in upcoming steps. However, unlike those arrangements that you will make before you begin each day's meditation, such as turning off your phone and putting your dog or cat in another room, induction is a step you will include during the session. In fact, it must be the first step you master, and it will lead off every session. Just to head off any confusion, after opening each meditative session with induction, you will not be in what the entertainment industry misleadingly depicts as a hypnotic trance. You will be perfectly primed and able to complete all steps in the process that follows in the next three chapters. Step 1, Induction. Induction, open the door to your creative state. I urge you to spend at least a week of daily sessions, or more if needed, devoted to practicing induction. Remember that this process will take up to the first 20 minutes of each meditation session. You'll want this to become a familiar and comfortable habit, so don't rush through it. Your objective is to stay present. Preparation for induction. In addition to the aspects of preparation I discussed earlier, here are some further tips. First, sit up straight and close your eyes. As soon as you do so, blocking some sensory environmental input from coming in, your brain waves lessen in frequency, moving toward that desirable alpha state. Then surrender, stay present, and love yourself enough to move through this process. You may find that soothing music aids in the progression from high beta to alpha, although it isn't necessary to use sounds. Induction techniques. There are many similar variations on induction techniques. Whether you use either the body part or water rising induction, alternate them on different days, employ some other method you've used in the past, or devise a different one altogether isn't important. What is important is that you move from that analytical beta state to the sensory state of alpha, and focus on the body, which is the subconscious mind and the operating system, where you can then make the changes you want. Overview. Body part induction. One induction technique may at first seem contradictory. You'll focus your attention on your body and the environment. Those are two of the big three that you have to overcome. But in this case, you're in control of your thoughts about them. Why is it desirable to focus on the body? Remember, it and the subconscious mind are merged. So when we become acutely aware of the body and sensations related to it, we enter the subconscious mind. We're in that operating system I've mentioned often. Induction is a tool that can be used to get into that system. The cerebellum plays a role in proprioception, awareness of how our bodies are positioned in space. So in this induction, as you rest your awareness on different parts of your body in space and the space around your body in space, you're using your cerebellum to perform this function. And since the cerebellum is the seat of the subconscious mind, as you place your consciousness on where your body is orientated in space, you access your subconscious mind and bypass your thinking brain. Moreover, induction shuts down the analytical mind by forcing you into a sensing, feeling mode. Feelings are the language of the body, which in turn is the subconscious mind. So induction allows you to use the body's natural language to interpret and change the language of the operating system. In other words, if you're sensing or putting your awareness on different aspects of your body, you would be thinking less, shifting your analytical thoughts from past to future less, and broadening your focus more to encompass a very different scope. Not narrowly obsessive, but rather creative and open, and you would move from beta to alpha. All of this happens as you move from that narrow-minded range of attention to an expanded focus on the body and the space around it. Buddhists refer to this as open focus, occurring when the brain waves naturally become orderly and synchronized. Open focus produces a new, powerfully coherent signal that allows parts of the brain that were not communicating with other parts to now do so. That enables you to produce an extremely coherent signal. While you can measure that on a brain scan, more important is that you can feel the difference in the clarity and focus of your thoughts, intentions, and feelings. Body part induction. Specifically, you will focus on the location or orientation of your body in space. For example, think about the location of your head, starting at its top and gradually moving down. As the induction progresses from body part to body part, sense and become aware of the space that each occupies. Also sense the density, the weight or heaviness, or the volume of space that it occupies. By focusing your attention on your scalp, then next on your nose, then your ears and so on, moving down the body until you've focused on the bottoms of your feet, you will notice some changes. This movement from part to part and the emphasis on the spaces within the spaces is the key to this. Next, become aware of the teardrop-shaped area surrounding your body and the space it takes up. When you can sense that area of space around your body, your attention now is no longer on your body. Now, you are not your body, but something grander. This is how you become less body and more mind. Finally, become aware of the area that the room you're in occupies in space. Sense the volume that it fills. When you reach this point, this is when the brain begins to change its disorderly wave patterns to more balanced and orderly ones. We can measure these differences in how you are thinking. We can view your thought patterns on an EEG and see how you've moved from beta to alpha wave activity. We're not interested in just getting you into an alpha state of any kind, though. You want to be in a highly coherent, organized alpha. That's why you will concentrate first on your body and its orientation in space, then move from those individual parts to the volume or perimeter of space surrounding the body, and eventually focus your observation on the entire room. If you can sense that density of space, if you can notice it and pay attention to it, you will naturally move from a state of thinking to feeling. When that happens, it's impossible to maintain the high beta state that characterizes the emergency mode of survival and an over-focused condition. Water rising induction. Another similar induction technique you can use is to imagine water moving into the room where you are sitting, then gradually rising. Observe, sense the space in which the room is situated and the space that the water occupies. At first, the water would rise to cover your feet, move up the shins to the knees, spill over them and into your lap, move up your abdomen and chest, covering your arms, rising to your neck, up past your chin, lips, and head, until the water fills the entire room. While some people may not like the idea of being covered completely by water, others find it soothing, warm, and inviting. As a reminder, during your week one meditations, your job is to practice the induction technique. If you record this induction yourself, make certain that you repeat the same questions that I have provided in my guided induction instructions in the appendices, with their emphasis on words and phrases such as sense, notice, feel, become aware of, become conscious of, and attend to. Also words such as volume, density, perimeter of space, weight of space, and so forth will help you focus your observation. Instead of moving quickly from one part to another, allow some time to pass, a good 20 to 30 seconds or more, for those sensory inputs and the feelings of those parts in space to really settle in. Roughly, allow about 20 minutes to do the body part induction from head to toe, or in the case of the water, immersion, from toe to head. If you have meditated before, you will no doubt understand that eventually you lose any sense of time passing, as your brain waves diminish in frequency and you move into that calm and relaxed alpha state, where the inner world is more real than the outer world. Chapter 11. Prune away the habit of being yourself. Week 2. During week 2, it's time to add 3 steps in pruning away the habit of being yourself. Recognizing, then admitting and declaring, followed by surrendering. First, read through all these steps and answer the related questions. Then devote at least a week to daily meditation sessions, in which you first go into induction, then move through the 3 steps. Of course, if you need more than 1 week to feel competent at all this, that's fine. Step 2. Recognizing. Identify the problem. The first move necessary in fixing anything is to understand what is presently not working. You have to know what the problem is and then name it in order to have power over it. Many people who have had a near-death experience report that they underwent a life review in which they saw, as if watching a movie, all of their covert and overt actions, their expressed and suppressed sentiments, their public and private thoughts, and their conscious and unconscious attitudes. They saw who they were and how their thoughts, words, and deeds affected everyone and everything in their lives. Afterward, they typically describe having a greater understanding about themselves and a desire to do a better job of living from then on. As a result, they perceive new possibilities and better ways to be in any opportunity. Having seen themselves from a truly objective point of view, they clearly know what they want to change. Recognition is like having a life review every day. Since you have all of the equipment in your brain to notice who you are being, why not do this before you die? And in effect, be reborn in the same life. With practice, this type of awareness can help you override what would otherwise be the predetermined destiny of your brain and body. The automatic, enslaving, hardwired programs of the mind and the memorized emotions that have chemically conditioned the body. Only when you are truly conscious and aware do you begin to wake up from the dream. To become still, quiet, patient and relaxed, and then be attentive to the habits of the old personality self, disengages your subjective consciousness from overutilized attitudes and extreme emotional states. You no longer are the same mind, because you are now freeing yourself from the chains of the self-centered nature of the ego lost in itself. And when you see who you have been by means of the observer's watchful eye, you will crave life more because you will truly desire to make a greater difference the next day. As you develop the skills of contemplation and self-observation, you are cultivating the ability to separate your consciousness from the subconscious programs that have defined the old self. To move your consciousness from being the old self to being the observer of the old self loosens the connection to the old you. And as you recognize who you have been through the skill of metacognition, the ability via the frontal lobe to observe who you are being, for the first time, your consciousness is no longer immersed in unconscious programs. You are becoming conscious of what was once unconscious. This is making the first strides towards personal change. Begin your own life review. In order to discover and explore aspects of the old self that you want to change, it is necessary to pose some frontal lobe questions. Opportunity to write. Take some time to ask yourself questions such as these, or any others that occur to you, and write down your answers. 1. What kind of person have I been? 2. What type of person do I present to the world? What is one side of my gap like? 3. What kind of person am I really like inside? What is the other side of my gap like? 4. Is there a feeling that I experience, even struggle with, over and over again every day? 5. How would my closest friends and family describe me? 6. Is there something about myself that I hide from others? 7. What part of my personality do I need to work on improving? 8. What is one thing I want to change about myself? Choose an emotion to unmemorize. Next, choose one of your afflictive emotional states and limited states of mind, one of the habits of being yourself that you want to relinquish. Since memorized feelings condition the body to be the mind, these self-limiting emotions are responsible for your automatic thought processes, which create your attitudes, which influence your limited beliefs about self in relationship to everyone or everything, which contribute to your personal perceptions. Every one of the emotions listed below originates from the chemicals of survival, which strengthen the ego's control. The following examples can help you get started. Opportunity to write. Pick one emotion that is a big part of who you are and that you want to unmemorize. Your chosen emotion may be one that's not listed below. Remember that this word has meaning to you because it is a feeling that is familiar to you. It is one aspect of the self that you want to change. I recommend that you write down the emotion you came up with, because you will be working with it throughout this and later steps. Examples of survival emotions: insecurity, hatred, judgment, victimization, worry, guilt, depression, shame, anxiety, regret, suffering, frustration, fear, greed, sadness, disgust, envy, anger, resentment, unworthiness, and lack. Most people see these examples and say, "Can I pick more than one?" It is important in the beginning to work with one emotion at a time. In any case, they are all linked together neurologically and chemically. For example, have you ever noticed that when you're angry, you're frustrated? When you're frustrated, you hate. When you hate, you judge. When you judge, you're envious. When you're envious, you're insecure. When you're insecure, you're competitive. When you're competitive, you're selfish. All of these emotions are run by the same combined survival chemicals, which then stimulate related states of mind. On the other hand, the same is true for elevated states of mind and emotion. When you're joyous, you love. When you love, you feel free. When you're free, you're inspired. When you're inspired, you're creative. When you're creative, you're adventurous. And so on. All of these feelings are driven by different chemicals that then influence how you think and act. Let's use anger as an example of a recurring emotion you might choose to work with. As you unmemorize anger, all of the other self-limiting emotions will incrementally decrease within you as well. If you become less angry, you'll be less frustrated, hateful, judgmental, envious, and so on. The good news is that you are actually taming the body to no longer run unconsciously as the mind. Consequently, as you change one of these destructive emotional states, the body will be less prone to live out of control, and you will change many other personality traits. Observe how the unwanted emotion feels in your body. Next, close your eyes and think about how you feel when you experience that particular emotion. If you can observe yourself overcome by that emotion, pay attention to how it feels in your body. There are different sensations that correlate to different emotions. I want you to become aware of all of those physical signs. Do you become hot, irritated, jittery, weak, flushed, deflated, tight? Scan your body with your mind and notice in what area you feel that emotion. If you do not feel anything in your body, that's okay. Just remember what you want to change about yourself. Your observation is changing it moment by moment. Now become familiar with your body's present state. Does your breathing change? Do you feel impatient? Are you physically in pain? And if so, if that pain had an emotion, what would it be? Just notice what physiologically is happening in the moment, and don't try to run from it. Be with it. The host of different feelings in your body become an emotion when you name it as anger, fear, sadness, or whatever the case may be. So let's get down to all of those feelings and physical sensations that create the emotion you want to unmemorize. Allow yourself to feel that emotion without being distracted by anything or anyone. Don't do anything to try to make it go away. Almost everything you have done in your life has been to run from this feeling. You used everything outside of you to try to make it go away. Be present with your emotion and feel it as energy in your body. This emotion has motivated you to appropriate everything you know in your environment to fashion an identity. Because of this feeling, you create an ideal for the world instead of an ideal for yourself. This feeling is who you really are. Acknowledge it. It is one of the many masks of your personality that you have memorized. It started from an emotional reaction to an event in your life, which lingered into a mood, which developed into a temperament, which created your personality. This emotion has become the memory of yourself. It speaks nothing about your future. Your attachment to it means that you are mentally and physically bound by your past. If emotions are the end product of experiences, then by embracing the same emotion every day, the body is being fooled into believing that your external world is staying the same. And if your body is being conditioned to re-experience the same circumstances in your environment, you can never evolve and change. As long as you live by this emotion daily, you can only think in the past. Define the state of mind associated with the emotion. Next, ask yourself this simple question. How do I think when I feel this way? Let's say that you want to change anger as one of your personality traits. Ask yourself, what is my attitude when I feel anger? The answer might be controlling or hateful, or it might be self-important. By the same means, if you want to overcome fear, you might have to address the state of mind or feeling overwhelmed, anxious, or desperate. Suffering might lead to feeling victimized, depressed, lazy, resentful, or needy. Now become aware of or remember your thinking when you feel this way. What is the state of mind that is powered by this emotion? This feeling influences everything you do. States of mind represent an attitude that is driven by the memorized feelings subconsciously anchored in the body. An attitude is a series of thoughts that are connected to a feeling, or vice versa. It is the repetitive cycle of thinking and feeling, feeling and thinking. Therefore, you need to define your neural habit that is influenced by your particular emotional addiction. Opportunity to write. Become aware of how you think, your state of mind, when you are feeling the emotion you want to change. You may pick from the list below or add any that are not listed. Your selection will be based on the unwanted emotion you identified previously, but it's natural to be in one or more limiting states of mind relating to that emotion. So write down one or two that resonate with you, because you will work with these in upcoming steps. Examples of limiting states of mind: competitive, overwhelmed, complaining, blaming, confused, distracted, self-pitying, desperate, lacking, overly intellectual, self-important, shy, timid, introverted, needing recognition, under, overconfident, lazy, dishonest, controlling, deceptive, conceited, dramatic, rushing, needy, self-involved, sensitive, insensitive. Most of your behaviors, choices, and deeds are equal to this feeling. Therefore, you will think and act in predictable, routine ways. There can be no new future, just more of the same past. It's time to remove the colored lenses and no longer see life through the filter of the past. Your job is to be with that emotional attitude without doing anything but observing it. You've just identified an unwanted emotion and its corresponding state of mind that you want to unmemorize. But remember that you still have a couple of steps to read through before you integrate them all into your daily meditation. Step 3. Admitting and declaring. Admitting, acknowledge your true self rather than the self you show to other people. Allowing yourself to be vulnerable you move beyond the realm of your senses and begin to introduce yourself to the universal consciousness that is the giver of your life. You develop a relationship with this greater intelligence, telling it who you have been and what you want to change about yourself, and admitting what you have been hiding. Owning up to who we really are and what our past mistakes have been, and asking to be accepted, are among the most challenging things for us to do as humans. Think of how you felt as a child when you had to fess up to your parents, a teacher, or a friend. Have those feelings of guilt, shame, and anger changed now that you're an adult? Most likely you still experience them, but maybe not as strongly. What makes achieving step 3 possible is knowing that we are admitting our faults and failures to our higher power and not to another similarly flawed human. As a result, when we admit to ourselves and to that universal power, there is no punishment, no judgment, no manipulation, no emotional abandonment, no blame, no scorekeeping, no rejection, no loss of love, no damnation, no separation, and no banishment. All of the preceding acts are derived from the old paradigm of God, which has been shrunk to the likeness of an insecure man, completely self-absorbed, steeped in the concepts of good and bad, right and wrong, positive and negative, success and failure, love and hate, heaven and hell, pain and pleasure, and fear and more fear. This traditional model must be addressed because one must enter this consciousness with a new consciousness. This enigma can be called innate intelligence, chi, divine mind, spirit, the quantum, the life force, the infinite mind, the observer, universal intelligence, the quantum field, invisible power, mother-father life, cosmic energy, or higher power. Regardless of what name you give it, you must see this energy as an unlimited source of power within you and around you, which you utilize and create from throughout your life. It is the consciousness of intent and the energy of unconditional love. It is impossible for it to judge, punish, threaten, or banish anyone or anything, because it would be doing those very things to itself. It only gives in love, compassion, and understanding. It already knows everything about you. It's you who have to make an effort to know and develop a relationship with it. It has been observing you from the moment you were created. You are an extension of it. It only waits in hope, in admiration, and in patience. It only wants you to be happy. And if you are happy being unhappy, that's fine too. That's how much it loves you. This self-organizing invisible field is wise beyond comprehension, because it exists through an interconnected matrix of energy that extends in all dimensions in space and time, past, present, and future. It records the thoughts, desires, dreams, experiences, wisdom, evolution, and knowledge from all of eternity. It is an immense, immaterial, multidimensional field of information. It knows much more than you and I do, even though we think we know it all. Its energy can be likened to many levels of frequency, and like radio waves, every frequency carries information. All of life on a molecular level vibrates, breathes, dances, shimmers, and is alive. It is completely receptive and malleable to our willful intentions. Let's suppose you want joy in your life. So you ask the universe for it every day. However, you've memorized suffering into such a state of being that you whine all day long. You hold everyone responsible for the way you feel. You make excuses for yourself and you mope around constantly feeling sorry for yourself. Can you see that you can declare joy all you want, but you are demonstrating being a victim? Your mind and body are in opposition. You are thinking a certain way one moment, then you are being something else the remainder of the day. Hence, can you humbly and sincerely admit who you have been, what you have been hiding, and what you want to change about yourself, so that you eliminate unnecessary pain and suffering before you create the related experiences in your reality? To vacate and lay down your familiar personality for a brief period of time and knock on the door of the infinite in a state of joy and reverence is so much more conducive to change than allowing your personality to be fractured by your insistent course of destiny, created by who you were repeatedly being. Let's change in joy instead of changing in pain. Opportunity to write. Now close your eyes and become still. Look into the vastness of this mind and into yourself and begin to tell it who you have been. Develop a relationship with the greater consciousness that is giving you life by honestly and inwardly talking to it. Share with it the details of those stories that you have carried around with you. Writing down what comes to you will be useful in later steps. Examples of what you might admit to your higher power. I am afraid of falling in love because it hurts too much. I pretend I'm happy, but I'm really suffering because I'm lonely. I do not want anyone to know that I feel so guilty, so I lie about myself. I lie to people so that they like me, and so I won't feel so unloved and unworthy. I can't stop feeling self-pity. I think, act, and feel this way all day long because I do not know how else I can feel. I have felt like a failure most of my life, so I try extra hard to be a success. Now take a moment and review what you have written and what you want to admit to this power. Declaring outwardly, acknowledge your self-limiting emotion. In this part of the meditation process, you actually speak out loud who you have been and what you've been hiding about yourself. You tell the truth about yourself, put the past to rest, and close the gap between how you appear and who you really are. You give up your facade and the constant effort of being someone else. By declaring the truth about yourself out loud, you are breaking the emotional ties, agreements, dependencies, attachments, bonds, and addictions to all those external cues in your life. In the workshops that I conduct around the world, this is the most difficult part of the steps. No one really wants anyone to know who they really are. They want to maintain how they appear. However, as you have learned, it takes an enormous amount of energy to keep up this ongoing image. This is the point where you want to release that energy. And remember, since emotions are energy in motion, everything that you've experienced and interacted with in your external life has had an energetic emotion attached to it. Essentially, you are bonded to some person, thing, or place by an energy that exists beyond time and space. This is how you continually remember yourself as an ego with a personality, identifying emotionally with and being tied to everything in your life. For example, if you hate someone, that hate keeps you emotionally attached to the other person. Your emotional bond is the energy that keeps this individual in your life, so that you can feel hate and thus reinforce one aspect of your personality. In other words, you use that person to stay addicted to hatred. By the way, it should be obvious by now that your hatred is primarily hurting you. As you release chemicals from your brain to your body, you truly hate yourself. To speak the truth about yourself out loud in this step empowers you to become free from hatred and less connected to the person or thing in your external reality that reminds you of who you have been. If you recall the gap discussed earlier, you know that most people rely on the environment to remember themselves as a somebody. Therefore, if you have memorized an emotion as part of your personality, and you are addicted to it, then when you declare who you have been emotionally, you are calling energy back, releasing it to you from your emotional bonds with everything and everyone in your life. This conscious statement by you will free you from the old self. In addition, by claiming your limitations and consciously revealing what you have been hiding, you are freeing the body from being the mind. And for that reason, you are closing the gap between how you appear and who you really are. When you verbalize who you have been, you also liberate energy stored in your body. This will become free energy for you to use later on in the meditation to create a new self and life. Bear in mind that your body will not want to do this very readily. Your ego automatically hides this emotion because it doesn't want anyone to know the truth about itself. It wants to remain in control. The servant has become the master. But the master now must let the servant know that he or she has been delinquent, unconscious, and absent. So it makes sense that your body will not want to relinquish control, because it does not trust you. But if you just open your mouth and speak out in spite of the body's control, it will begin to feel lighter and relieved, and you will begin to be back in command. This is how you define who you really are without any associations to your external environment. You are severing your energetic bond to the emotional attachment of all the elements in the outer world. If admitting is an inner acknowledgement, then declaration is an outward one. What is it that you want to declare? It's time to merge this part of step 3 with the previous part. Remember that you're building this section into one fluid process. Using the example of anger, you might say aloud, "I have been an angry person my whole life." Remember the general aim of what you want to declare. In this part of the meditation for the week, while you are sitting up with eyes closed, you'll open your mouth and softly say the emotion that you are declaring. Anger. While you prepare yourself to do this and while you are engaged in verbalizing your declaration, it probably will not feel good to you. Do it anyway. That's your body talking to you. Your end result is that you are inspired, uplifted, and energized. Make this step simple, easy, and lighthearted. Do not overanalyze what you have done. Just know that the truth shall set you free. Remember that you're not ready to start your week 2 meditations yet. In this section, you have recognized an unwanted emotion and its corresponding state of mind that you want to unmemorize. Then you admitted it inwardly and declared it outwardly. There's one more step to read, after which you can put all four together in your week 2 meditation. Step 4. Surrendering. Yield to a greater power, allow it to resolve your limitations or blocks. Surrendering is the final step in this section, in which you are pruning away the habit of being yourself. Most of us struggle with the idea of letting go, of allowing someone or something else to have control. Keeping in mind whom you are surrendering to, the source, infinite wisdom, should make this process go much easier. Einstein said that no problem could be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. The limited state of mind of your personality is responsible for creating your limitations, and the answer has not come to you. So why not go to a grander, more resourceful consciousness to help you overcome this facet of yourself. Since all potentials exist in this infinite sea of possibilities, you are humbly asking it to take your limitations from you in a different way than the mode in which you have been trying to resolve this issue. Since the best way to transform yourself has not occurred to you, and what you have been doing up to this point to overcome the problems in your life has not worked out yet, it's time to contact a greater resource. The consciousness of the ego could never see the solution. It is steeped in the emotional energy of the dilemma, and therefore it only thinks, acts, and feels equal to that mind. It only creates more of the same. Your change will be executed in a way that is unlimited from the objective mind's perspective. It sees you from the perspective of not being you. It perceives potentials that you have not even thought of because you were too busy being lost in the dream by responding to life in predictable ways. However, if you say that you have surrendered to the objective consciousness's assistance, yet still try to do things your own way, can you see that it is impossible for it to assist you in changing anything in your life? By your own free will, you would thwart its efforts. Most of us obstruct this mind because we go back to trying to resolve our problems by living within the same unconscious habitual lifestyle. We get in our own way. In fact, most of us wait until the ego is driven into the ground, to the point that we can no longer continue business as usual. This is when we usually surrender and receive some type of aid. You can't both surrender and try to control the outcome. Surrender requires that you give up what you think you know from your limited mind, especially your belief about how this problem in your life should be taken care of. To truly surrender is to let go of the ego's control, trust in an outcome that you haven't thought of yet, and allow this all-knowing, loving intelligence to take over and provide the best solution for you. You must come to the understanding that this invisible power is real, is fully conscious of you, and can completely take care of any aspect of the personality. When you do, it will organize your life in a way that is just right for you. When you ask for help by simply releasing to a greater mind the emotion you have admitted and declared, you won't have to bargain, beg, make deals or promises, commit halfway, manipulate, weasel, ask for forgiveness, feel guilty or shameful, live with regrets, suffer from fear, provide excuses. Moreover, you won't have to give your higher mind conditions like, you should, and it would be better if. You can't tell this unlimited grand essence how to go about anything. If you do, you are back to trying to do things your way. And naturally, it will stop helping you so as to allow you your own free will. Instead, can your free will be, thy will be done. Just surrender in sincerity, humility, honesty, certainty, clarity, passion, trust, and then get out of the way. Joyously give up the emotion you want to let go of to a more expanded mind, and know that it will do this for you. When your will matches its will, when your mind matches its mind, and when your love of self matches its love for you, it answers the call. The side effects of surrendering include inspiration, joy, love, freedom, gratitude, exuberance. When you feel joy or live in a state of joy, you have already accepted the future outcome that you want as a reality. When you live as if your prayers have already been answered, this greater mind can do what it does best by organizing your life in new and unusual ways. What if you knew that some issue facing you had been completely taken care of? What if you were certain that something exciting or great was about to happen to you? If you knew it without a doubt, there would be no worry, no sadness, no fear.